So let's understand about the modern type of learning known as e-learning or electronic learning. It is very rampant and very widely used in today's world because there are certain specific advantages of this kind of learning for the employees in an organization. They need not go to any particular classroom, or they need not be told how to do the job and all that. In e-learning, what a person can do is he can learn at his own speed. He can learn in the mobile or in the computer at home. The classes will be taken by an expert where video lectures are being loaded on the computer, and a person can learn at his own speed. It's not necessary that he has to sit continuously for 2 hours or 3 hours like that. Whenever he gets time, he can learn, and then he can close the window and restart whenever he wants from the time when he has left, from the learning aspect what he has left, he can get the same learning aspect next time when he puts his user ID and password for that. Secondly, there are questions asked in between also to the person, and he is supposed to answer that, whereby he can get the direct feedback whether what answers he has given are right or wrong. Similarly, at the end of the module, there are 30 or 40 or 20 MCQs which can be given based on his learning, and he can answer, and there can be, say, minimum 70 to 80% marks he should obtain, then only he can go to the next module of learning about that subject. So that's how e-learning is becoming more and more effective, because it is more user-friendly, and he need not go to a particular site for which he has to travel, and even the trainer has to travel, and all the facilities have to be developed for that kind of learning. So let's understand about the next HR process, and that is performance management system. What are the various criteria used in performance management system? One is results. That means whatever a person is doing, he is performing. What are the results he is getting? That means initially certain objectives are defined for him. A weightage is given to each objective, and at the end of 3 months, 6 months, a year, whatever has been told, whatever has been decided as per the management by objective in a way, what are the results? What are the outcome of that objective? Then what are the actions he has taken, and what are his individual attributes to achieve those results are considered in this performance management system, especially in today's world where lot of team management is also in vogue. What are his individual attributes in that also may be taken into consideration apart from the team objectives. Performance assessor can be himself, where self-assessment may be done by him, because he knows exactly what is the objective and by what time he is supposed to achieve and what kind of quality is required for that achievement. So he can himself know exactly how he has performed during this period. So it can be self, it can be peers. His colleagues who are also working with him knows how he is giving customer satisfaction, how he is behaving with others, and if they have got certain work with him, whether their work was done within the time period of the right quality or not. So even the peers can assess the performance of this person. Similarly, immediate superior, naturally he is the main person who can assess the performance of his subordinate in much better way, because it is in association with the person the objectives are developed, and he has given those objectives in association with the person, of course, and they have agreed to achieve those objectives within the time period and to the quality. What kind of quality is required, that also is decided at that time. And he observes him every time, that whether the way he is performing, whether he is contacting the customers in the right way within the time frame, and whether he is giving the right kind of product or the service as required or not. Then comes subordinate to whom he is giving work. Even the subordinates can assess how the superior is performing as far as the soft skills are concerned, as far as the technical training to be given to their subordinates is concerned, etc. And as far as the development of the subordinates is concerned, whether he was instrumental in developing those subordinates or not. And the consumer, of course, is very important person to tell us the performance of this candidate who has given the product or the service to them. What were the percentage of rejects that consumer has to send, and what quality product or service has been given to them will be easily assessed by the consumer. So 360 degree appraisal is in vogue in today's performance management system in many organizations, including Reliance and Wipro and TCS, etc., where not only the person himself and the immediate superior gives the appraisal, but also the subordinate, the peers, the suppliers, the consumers, the other department people who may have got some work to be done through him, or even if he is a liaison officer, the outside officers, say government officers or the outside company managers with whom he is supposed to liaise with. So all these people are going to give the performance of this person with the right perspective, whereby bias can be removed from the immediate superior's point of view. At the same time, one can get lot of inference as far as the product or service provided by this person, as well as his behavior in the form of soft skills, etc. also. Well, 360 degree appraisal system is more important for middle and higher managers. It cannot be used for the workers or the supervisors at a lower level. Then comes performance assessment tools and techniques. We are going to learn in detail about these tools and techniques in the next slides. And improving effectiveness of the performance assessment by use of multiple evaluators, where one can evaluate selectively about certain aspects based on the requirement. At the same time, one can train these evaluators how to evaluate considering the right kind of indicators and giving the unbiased appraisal of this person. Then comes performance feedback, which should focus on behavior. It should be fact-finding thing rather than the fault-finding thing. It should be consistent with the requirement of the appraisal thing to be done. It should validate the appraisal. It should be absolutely fair. There should not be any personal bias. It should be specific for the issues rather than at a personal level or blaming a person as a whole. And there should be more of an empathetic approach for counseling than evaluation of the person. So what are the various performance appraisal methods? There are many types of performance appraisal methods which have been used in past, as well as some of the newer methods are there. Some of them we are going to learn in some details, because already you have learned this in HRM 1 earlier. So let's overview these things. One is job result, the other is essay method, the third one is mixed standard scales, the fourth one is force distribution, fifth one is graphic rating scale, sixth one is behavioral checklist, seventh one is behavioral anchored rating scales or bars, and management by objective. So job results it is not really an appraisal method per se, but it gives us a source of data that can be used to appraise the performance of this person. So what job has been given to this person, if we find out the outcome of that, the results of that gives us an idea overall whether he is performing properly or not. Typically an employee's results are compared against some objective standard of performance. So when a benchmarking is done, one can compare it with the best of the person who would have done this job in a proper way, what would have been the result of this or outcome of this performance of the job. One can compare it and tell whether this person is done excellent or average or below average. Similarly, results indexes are often used for appraisal purposes if an employee's job has measurable results. Well, many of the performance appraisal is done based on quantitative results, like for a salesman, how many products he has sold, or for a LIC agent, one can say that how many customers he has approached first, and out of that, how many have really bought the LIC policy from him. So one can have that kind of quantitative measurement. Examples of job result indexes are volume of sales, quantity and quality of work produced, etc. Results indexes such as turnover of the employee for the HR manager. What is the sickness absenteeism, which can tell us about overall the morale of people, the motivation of people, the internal locus of control, or whether they are having external locus of control, or whether job involvement is there whereby absenteeism will be less, and what are the number of grievances, you can find out from the number of complaints given in the suggestion box or directly to the superiors or the HR people. Then what is overall profitability of that particular department or the organization as a whole will tell us overall how the people have performed, and what are the production rates which can be used to evaluate ultimately the performance of the organizational units. Suppose they have got 10 departments. Now each department one can find out based on the products the different departments are producing. Say some are producing soap, some are producing detergent, some are producing washing machines, some are producing TV. So one can find out what are the number of products being produced by the department vis-a-vis the best in the industry, or vis-a-vis what it was produced in the previous year, and the orders that have been placed, whether it was done at the right time or not. So this is how one can find out the production as well as from the profits, profit margin that they are going to get, and the productivity, profitability also one can find out, and ultimately this will give us the job result and the performance appraisal of the department as a whole and then individual. Then comes SA method, where the evaluator gives in writing a proper report which gives the appraisal of the employee's performance in the form of the job behaviors as well as the results achieved by this person. The subject of an SA appraisal many times may be for justification of pay, it may be for promotion or termination decisions, but essays can be used for developmental purposes also. Well, when a person is working for 2 or 3 years, although the norm may be say 4 years for the promotion, if we want to promote a person earlier, one should justify it by giving what are the performance appraisal rating of this person in the past 2 years as compared to the normal people, whether they are excellent, whether the amount of profit achieved by the company because of the efforts of this person is much more than an average person, whether the orders achieved by this person is far exceeding the expectation or the objective kept for him, etc. At the same time, one can also think about the enthusiasm, the motivational aspect, the conscientiousness, development of the subordinates, etc., and the future potential, which can justify that he should be promoted earlier as compared to the normal people. So that's how the essay method will tell us clearly about justification of promotion, or if somebody is not performing well consistently, and because of him there is some property loss or the order loss because of the poor quality of the products or services, one can think of terminating this person. That also may be clearly delineated in the essay method. Since essay appraisals are to a large extent unstructured, here it may not be absolutely a structured format for that, and many times it is open-ended rather than, you know, yes or no. So standardization is not possible in this, and that becomes a major problem for the performance appraisal. So evaluator bias because of that is much more common, and one can discriminate a person based on the personal bias against the subordinate. Behavioral checklist is a rating form which contains specific statements which describe both the effective and the ineffective job behaviors. And based on these clear statements, one can easily identify what kind of behavior was seen in the candidate or in the employee. And this behavior is going to relate to a number of behavioral dimensions which may be determined to be absolutely relevant to the specific job that this person is performing. And thereby, one can have unbiased view about the performance appraisal of this person. Items from a behavioral checklist for a salesperson's job may be delineated in clearly that whether he has contacted more number of customers or not, whether the quality of is explaining to the customers by getting the customer feedback, one can find out. Similarly, one can even have clear statements regarding the products and services he is being providing, whether he is going out of the way or not. This is seen in these statements, and one can easily give the rating to this person based on that. Then there is another way, that is behaviorally anchored rating scale, which is also known as behavioral expectation scale, and this method represents the least innovation in performance, latest innovation in performance appraisal in the form of the experts in HR have actually mapped the behavioral expectations of the person and given a scale of 1 to 7, saying that if his behavior or his outcome is like this, it should be given as 1. If his outcome is particularly slightly higher than that, it should be given 2, and similarly up to 7. So it's an appraisal tool that anchors a numerical rating scale with specific behavioral examples of whether it is good, whether it is very good, whether it is slightly better than that, or whether it is poor, or whether it is absolutely below average, or whether it is average. It is a combination of rating scale as well as the critical incident techniques of the employee performance evaluation. That means in certain critical incidents, what was the behavior of this employee? To what extent it was right, to what extent it should have been done in a different way. Based on that, one can rate the person's critical incidents as well as the overall rating scale of his performance. Both these things can be combined and one can give the evaluation of this person. The critical incidents serve as anchor statements on a scale, and the rating form usually contains 6 to 8 specifically defined performance dimensions for this person, which can remove the bias of the rater, and it can clearly identify how much rating should be given to this employee based on his results that he is showing, especially in critical incidents. So these are some of the examples of behaviorally anchored rating scale for sales training. One can say that 7 points can be given and the performance is supposed to be extremely good when the behavior of the sales trainee shows that you can expect this trainee to make valuable suggestions for increased sales and to have positive relationships with the customers all over the country. So he is responsible not only for the relationship with the local people, but because of his excellent rapport with all the customers, because of his effective communication skill, because of the emotional intelligence that he has got, that he can relate to the emotions and feelings of the customers in the right way and in the right perspective, that he develops positive relations with all the customers all over the country. While the rating point can be 6 and the performance may be considered as good, if you can expect that he will initiate creative ideas for improved sales. It can be above average if you can expect to keep in touch with the customers throughout the year, that not only some of the seasonal period when the customers normally require those products, he will be in touch with them, but even without that season also he keeps in touch with them. It will be average if he can manage with difficulty to deliver the goods in time. Although he is delivering the goods in time to the customers, but it is done with some difficulty. While below average will be, you can expect him to unload the trucks when asked by the supervisor, so it is more of force that is required to be done by the supervisor, then only he is going to give the job done. While poor will be, you can expect him to inform only a part of the customers about their products, and naturally this sale will be less. And extremely poor will be, you can expect that he is going to take extended coffee breaks in the form of chit-chatting with his friends or somebody in his family on the phone. And instead of 15 minutes coffee break, he may be wasting time at least for 45 to 50 minutes or so. And he may roam around purposelessly. So then he can be given 1 point. Then comes management by objective, which is given by Peter Drucker in 1954, and it involves specific measurable goals with each employee and then periodically discussing his or her progress towards these goals. So organizational goals are percolated down to the individual and the objectives are set for this individual employee in a MBO process, along with his immediate superior. The objectives should be SMART, that means specific, measurable, achievable, relevant and time bound. The term MBO almost always refers to a comprehensive organization wide goal setting and appraisal program that consists of 6 main steps. First, one should set the organization's goal, which are SMART of course, in the form of, say, what should be the market's share, what should be the profitability of the company, what should be the products which should be innovative products, and what percentage of these products should be giving the profitability for the company, etc. So one should have company-wide goals established at the beginning for the next year. So suppose the year you are thinking of January to December, then one should set these goals at least by 15th of December of the previous year. Or if it is April to May, April to next end of February, or the 1st April to the 31st of March, one can say the financial year to be the year for MBO, then one can set this by at least 15th of March of the previous year for the next year. So, set departmental goals based on this. Here department heads and their superiors should jointly set goals for their departments. One should discuss and allocate these department goals among the various heads in the department. Say suppose you have got 5 VPs in the department, then all 5 will be allocated the specific goals based on the organization goals for that department. Then department heads are going to discuss the department goals with all their subordinates in the department, often at a department-wide meeting, and ask them to develop their own individual goals. That's how can each employee contribute to the department's attaining its goals, so that in turn these departments can attain the goals of the organization as a whole. One should define the expected results, that is set individual goals. Here the department heads and the subordinates set short-term performance targets in the form of, say, in 3 months how much they will achieve, in 5 months what kind of achievement will be there for their particular goal, and in a year how much they are going to achieve. So performance review and measure the results periodically should be done by department heads, and they should compare the actual performance for each employee with expected results, and they should give periodical feedback to these employees so that at least by the end of the year all the goals should be achieved by this department. They should provide feedback. Department heads should hold periodic performance review meetings with subordinates to discuss and evaluate the progress, ultimately to achieve the expected results by the end of the year. Midterm review should be done, and one may change the objectives based on the requirement or based on the external scenario. Suppose suddenly there is a global recession, and if your company is producing cosmetics, then naturally you cannot expect the number of cosmetic products to be sold in the same way that was thought of at the beginning of the year. Then you may have to revise this, and you may have to diversify your organization in certain other fields which people require essentially, whereby you can have the new objective set for your departmental people to sell those essential items rather than the cosmetics, or maybe part of it can be cosmetic, part of it can be the new products they can do or the services they can provide. So with this we can go in for the next HR process, that is career management systems. The significance of this is organizational perspective, where one should build future leaders and specialists, because some of the leaders are going to retire. Some of the specialists may change the job due to some personal circumstances or for their family problems or for the chronic sickness or anything may be the reason. So one should develop from within the talented leaders to be taking care of the future positions which may become vacant, or the future specialists, if they go, they should gain the specialty and the competency in that particular field so that they can take over. One should enable the effective resources and redeployment of these human resources, so that whenever some new technology also comes, they should be able to give us the best results for the organization, and the organization can sustain and grow. One should improve the business performance, whereby the newer ideas and innovative people are going to give us some new ideas, some new products, some new services, some new way of handling, some new packaging in case of marketing products, which will increase the business performance. One should increase the employee engagement so that the employees are highly enthusiastic, motivated, their morale is high, they have got internal locus of control, they are involved in all the decisions to be taken for the employees by the employer, and that will lead to better creativity, out of box thinking and better productivity and profitability for the organization. And this will lead to a better preferred employer by the employees, so that the external people, when they get an opportunity to apply for this organization, they are highly willing to do that, because that employer is considered to be preferred employer by all the employees of that company. And this will lead to less of sickness absenteeism and less of employee turnover also. So one should understand, as far as the career management is concerned, the individual career stages can be occupational and organizational choices. When a person is fresh after the graduation or post-graduation and he is looking for the new career for himself or herself, one should think of choosing the right occupation. Suppose you are a marketing postgraduate person, then whether you will become a marketing executive, or you will go for sales, or you will go for the research in marketing, etc., one should decide about what kind of occupation he should go in for. At the same time, he should try to choose the right organization for that, which is giving importance to those careers in much better way. Then comes, once a person decides what kind of occupation he wants to go in, engineering can be pure technical job, or he can go in for MBA in HR or marketing or finance also after engineering, and choose those particular professions also. So, early career will depend on his occupational and organizational choices that he has made. He will get involved with the new company professionals. He would be interested in learning the job at the earliest. He would find out the interesting sub-part of that job and try to be fit in with that particular career. Then once he is going through that particular job career, in the mid-career he will be partly settled. He has known everything about what he has been doing. He has developed some expertise in that, and then he is going to think about what he should do in this middle years of his career, so that his late career will be still better. And then the late career occurs where probably he may not be that creative, but because of his expertise he may be able to guide others. He can become a mentor for the younger people, and because of his experience and expertise, he may help the company to grow further with the help of the creative ideas of the younger people, to whom he is an inspirational leader, and that's how he can develop his late career further. So the career development strategies can be in the form of internal promotions, which can be vertical promotions, so from say DGM to senior DGM level, or from senior DGM level to the joint general manager level, etc., based on his expertise in that field, based on his improved liaisoning skills, based on his multi-skilling, based on his getting work done from others and motivating others, and overall general management expertise. He can be promoted vertically further and further, or it can be upgradation in his career in the form of say technical grade 1 to technical grade 2, or from manager 1 to manager 2, like that. While some of the promotions may be dry promotions, where his responsibility and accountability may increase, but he may not get increased pay, but definitely it is going to improve his status. So the purpose may be to utilize the employee's skill as well as knowledge. Also, one should develop competitive spirit so that by getting promotion, he gets more motivated and the other people who have not got promotion also will get motivated rather than jealous, and they will develop their competencies further so that they can be promoted next year. So, overall, by this competent internal source of employees will be developed, and these people will try to develop themselves further by self-development, and this will improve the morale of all the employees. The base of the promotion may be merit, whereby people who are meritorious and giving us the best results will be promoted. So this will lead to improved morale in all the people to learn newer things, to give more time towards their career, to develop further relations with others as well as self-development. While some of the organizations, especially government organizations, many times are having the promotions based on seniority. In this case, the senior persons who are loyal to the company for a long number of years will definitely get motivated. But the criticism about seniority is such that the younger people who are highly creative and who are performing better than most of the others in the form of their better competencies, better order, better profitability and better value to the company will get demotivated because they are not getting promotions based on their merit. They have to wait, and hence some of the senior people also may feel that whether I work or not, I'll get promotion after 6 years or 7 years, as in some of the organizations in government, which may not lead to competitive spirit among the people, which may not lead to self-development of these people, and frustration for certain people who are highly meritorious. They may leave the company also because of this. So the ideal may be combined merit as well as seniority based promotions, which can lead to the benefits of both the types of promotions. Music.